My guest today is Dr. Neil Mueller. He is professor of trumpet at the CMU School of Music. Welcome, and thanks for joining me for Listen to This on Afternoon Classical.
Hey, Judy, it's great to be with you today. I'm really excited to talk about the trumpet.
Yes, yes. Well, on Listen to This, we've heard from some of your colleagues about the voice, the tuba, the bassoon, and the viola. And, well, the viola is kind of like the introvert of an ensemble, but the trumpet is really like the extrovert of the ensemble, and most listeners would probably easily recognize the sound of a trumpet. But I'd like to talk to you today because there's more, but wait, there's more to the trumpet.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a good intro to the trumpet. We, just by nature, we are extroverts. And I think there's a quote, something, you know, you can't blow an uncertain trumpet. And having to do with public policy, but it's true on the actual trumpet as well, not just the metaphorical one. It's an instrument that which you will be heard and you will be perceived to be a leader. And so my job as the trumpet teacher is to make sure that my students are good leaders on the trumpet.
Oh, yeah, that's really true. You really can't hide when you're playing a trumpet.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I say, you know, some other instruments, they might make a little mistake and it'll just go right past you. But on the trumpet, you know, grandma in the back row is going to know about it. So so you got to practice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in a bit. But first of all, it seems like the trumpet has been around since the dawn of time. It's even mentioned quite a bit in the Bible. Would you give us a brief history of the trumpet?
Well, yeah, it's pretty tough to be brief, but I'm going to do my best. But certainly, yeah, going back to the Bible, in the Old Testament, the use of blowing the ram's horn, in the Jewish tradition or the shofar. I actually have a wonderful horn from a kudu, which is a great sounding little trumpet. And basically, that's what a trumpet is. It's in the brass family, but in the old days, in antiquity, it was maybe an animal's horn, or I also have a number of conch shells, where if you cut the end off and sort of make it smooth so that you can put your lips up to it, and you vibrate your lips into that cavity, and it's really amazingly loud and wonderful sound as far as I'm concerned. So the trumpet is going way back, the music of the sound of kings, of royalty, of celebration. And for many, many years, when they started making trumpets out of brass, and that's a fantastic, interesting story in and of itself. I'd invite the listeners to think about how you make a bend in a brass tubing. You know, if you take a McDonald's straw and try to bend it so that it's curved the way the sides of a trumpet are. It's sort of an amazing process. But when they started figuring that out and making trumpets and horns out of brass, that was basically what the trumpet was for many, many years. And so it was basically just like a bugle, and so no vowels on the trumpet in the medieval era or Renaissance, and it was really in the Baroque era. So if we think of composers like Handel or Bach or Telemann or Vivaldi, they all wrote great music for the trumpet. That trumpet had no vowels, but it was a solo instrument because the trumpeters had learned to play very high on the trumpet and could play scales and play very virtuosically, but with no vowels. It's sort of amazing.
Yes, yes. And you mentioned the bugle. So we think of the trumpet used as maybe in battle or as a fanfare or heralding, like you said, kings, like a signal instrument.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Because of the bell, the sound could be heard over a great distance. And so the trumpet was used in battle to even to just communicate how, you know, what the troops should be doing, whether retreating or flank left. I'm not even really sure, but movements on the battlefield could be communicated by the trumpet. I always think that's an advantage, that at least in those days the trumpeter would be backed by the commander, not right up in front. So yeah, it's heard over a great distance, but also, you know, in the the courtly time and the Renaissance and before then, trumpeters were actually organized into guilds, and so you were a skilled craftsman and tightly controlled also. You'd apprentice with a trumpeter, but these would be good jobs, but that was strictly regulated. And you might be employed by the court, and that also was a sign that you were a person of great wealth and importance and power. And so, you know, we know that, you know, dignitaries would travel to the next duchy or whatever, and the next court, and they'd take along their trumpeters and often kettle drummers, so timpanists. And I think there was maybe even just a little bit of intimidation that might have gone on in those days.
So throughout history, the trumpet and trumpet players have been a pretty big deal.
Well, I'd like to think so. And, yeah. And certainly, you know, the musicians have jokes, and these jokes are often, as most good humor is, it's based in a little bit of reality. And so, of course, the trumpeter's handshake is you put out your hand and say, "Hi, I'm better than you." How does a trumpet player screw in a light bulb? You hold up the light bulb and the world revolves around you. there's a bit of ego involved in playing the trumpet as well.
Well, speaking of that, let's listen to an example of some trumpet music. And of course, there's so much great music of all genres that feature the trumpet: classical, jazz, pop, everything. But we will focus mostly on classical today. But talking about having to be a leader and having a bit of an ego, you have to put yourself right out there. And here's a piece that you suggested does that very well. It's the Promenade from Pictures from an Exhibition by Modest Mussorgsky.
This is such a wonderful piece, Judy. This opening Promenade from Pictures at an Exhibition by Mussorgsky in this recording is orchestrated by the brilliant French composer Maurice Ravel. And the image that you might have in your mind is of a stately and nobleman walking in and viewing this great art exhibition. And I think the trumpet is a great choice for this.
So the recording we'll hear now is with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. They're conducted by Sir George Schulte.
Oh, and this is just such a great recording of a great orchestra. The brass section of the Chicago Symphony was renowned still today, but especially from the middle of the 20th century up until now. And one of the leaders of that brass section for 51 years, I believe, was the great Adolf Bud Herseth. And so you'll hear him in this recording.
That was the Promenade from Pictures from an Exhibition by Modest Mussorgsky, featuring Adolf Herseth on trumpet, longtime principal trumpet player with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, led by Sir George Schulte. My guest today on Afternoon Classical for Listen to This is Dr. Neil Mueller. He is professor of trumpet at the CMU School of Music. Again, thanks so much for joining me today.
This is fun, Judy.
You know, another big, big trumpet solo in orchestral repertoire is from the Symphony No. 5 by Gustav Mahler. And we talked earlier about how trumpet players have to be leaders and very sure of themselves when they have these big parts in orchestras. And I'm sure you have lots of stories to tell about your time in playing in ensembles.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, playing Mahler 5 is sort of a high point if you get a chance to play this piece. And I, you know, it was great, so great to hear the promenade. And I think of that little solo is almost like maybe just like giving an introductory speech in some ways. And then, you know, contrast that with the opening to Mahler 5, and the trumpet has a big role throughout the symphony, but especially the first movement is just really something. And it's almost like the soliloquy from Shakespeare's Hamlet. And it's such a deep thing. It really, Mahler was after sort of both grief and rage if you can imagine the opening of this symphony, the first movement is sort of a funeral march. And the trumpet is what leads that off.
Yes, and that brings me to the function of a trumpet in the orchestra. Of course, like we said, it's a real extrovert role. It's right out there. But while it can signal like a fanfare or like an introductory speech, but it also can express, you know, grief and lots of emotions too. So really the trumpet plays a lot of different roles in an ensemble.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then, you know, even in pieces where the trumpet does not play a solo role, and I love to play Mozart and Haydn and Beethoven symphonies, even though the trumpet does not have a starring role, but you're sort of outlining the rhythm and outlining the harmony, and in many ways, I've heard people say that there's a concertmaster in front, of course, playing the violin, but the concertmaster in the back of the orchestra might be the trumpet player. And I don't say that necessarily out of ego, but again, with the volume of the trumpet and the way that it's used by composers, it does sort of have a certain sense of center of gravity.
Yes, yes, that's really true. Let's listen to that first movement of Mahler's Fifth Symphony. And, you know, this reminds me a little bit of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. It's not as bombastic at the beginning, but that rhythm a little bit, that da-da-da-da rhythm, again, sort of like fate knocking at the door. That's what that reminds me of.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And Mahler would have been aware of that.
Yes, yes, for sure. And we can hear that motif throughout the whole first movement of Mahler's Fifth Symphony. So our afternoon classical listeners today can listen to that. And as it expresses sadness and grief and anger all throughout the movement, that same motif does something different almost every time. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, that triplet figure which opens the movement, then the trumpet is present at the very end with an arpeggiated triplet, and then echoed by the flute at the very end before the end of the movement.
So let's listen to the very, very important role the trumpet has to play in the first movement of the Symphony No. 5 in C sharp minor by Gustav Mahler. Here's the New York Philharmonic, and they're conducted by Zubin Mehta. That was the first movement of the Symphony No. 5 in C sharp minor by Gustav Mahler. Zubin Mehta led the New York Philharmonic. Again, the very important role the trumpet has to play there. My guest this afternoon is professor of trumpet at the CMU School of Music, Dr. Neil Mueller. Thanks so much. Love that Mahler symphony.
It's such a wonderful piece, and that recording, really great. Again, someone who spent time in the Chicago Symphony and then became principal trumpet of the New York Philharmonic, that's Phil Smith, one of the great giants of orchestral trumpet playing in that recording. Really great to hear him.
Yes, thanks for that. And, you know, another interesting thing about the trumpet that maybe some folks aren't aware of is there are so many different kinds of trumpets. There's the B-flat trumpet, there's an E-flat trumpet, the little piccolo trumpet, and the cornet, and the flugelhorn. Would you sort that out for us?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's an interesting thing is that the history of trumpet is that trumpets came in many keys. the trumpet along with the horn originally was again like a bugle, just one length, but they figured out that they could insert some extra length between the mouthpiece and the instrument and change the keys. And so that's sort of a vestige of our ancient heritage as brass players. And so we have different keyed instruments. And the funny thing is that this is a little known fact outside of the orchestra, but very often we might play a trumpet part that says trumpet in E flat, but we might play it on a C trumpet or a B flat trumpet. And so the player sort of has to determine what's the best fit. For example, the trumpet that you heard Phil Smith playing in the New York Philharmonic and Bud Herseth in the Chicago Symphony is a C trumpet. And that's pretty much the standard instrument in American orchestras. If you go to Russia and hear a great orchestra, and they have fantastic orchestras there, it's very common that the standard instrument might be a B-flat trumpet. If you go to Germany or Austria and hear one of the great orchestras there, they may play C or B-flat trumpet, but it'll be a rotary, a different style valve, and a very different, slightly different sounding instrument. So there's great variety. The B-flat trumpet is sort of our standard trumpet, what everybody grows up learning, and so that's the sort of the largest, the longest instrument in the key of B flat. There are a couple other instruments that are mellower sounding. The cornet, which has a great history. Of course, a lot of people here in Michigan know of brass bands and that whole British brass band tradition. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the cornet is a very important part of that. The flugelhorn, which we were talking before this, and we were talking about Chuck Mangione, of course, in the 70s. Had a big hit playing the flugelhorn. It's a very sort of on the other side from the trumpet. It's on the other side of the cornet. It's even more mellow and large bell and very beautiful sound. But then different keyed trumpets, the E flat trumpet. If you listen to let's say 95% of the recordings of the great Haydn trumpet concerto or the Hummel trumpet concerto are performed on E-flat trumpet. There's there's a D trumpet. There's piccolo trumpet, little tiny, about half the size of our standard trumpet that often gets used to play Baroque music, even though the piccolo trumpet wasn't invented until the 20th century. We got a lot of toys. I sometimes compare
a lot of tools in the toolbox.
Oh, it's wonderful. I think trumpet players are sometimes sort of like golfers. You know, it's like, oh, I got to get that new club.
Yeah,
I got to get that new club. But
as a trumpet player, do you have to have all of those instruments, or you just have a few of them, or do you just collect them, or?
As a classical trumpet player, you pretty much have to have this wide array. There are certain pieces that really, in most cases, will have to be done a certain way. And it does, you know, these are the tools of our trade. So playing as a soloist, as a chamber musician, and an orchestral musician, I have to have a B flat, a C, an E flat, which often can be converted to a D trumpet, a piccolo trumpet, often a cornet, and often a flugelhorn as well. So yeah, we do need these different tools to be able to do to make the sounds that the composer was interested in hearing. And so it is necessary. I will say that I really admire jazz trumpet players, not only for their skill at improvising, but for the fact that when they go to a gig, they need a B-flat trumpet and a flugelhorn and maybe a couple mutes. And that I'm always jealous of that.
Yeah, well, all of those different instruments, is there much of a difference in how you play them, in the technique or what you're doing?
There are slight differences, and it can be a little bit disconcerting when you're playing, when you look at a note and have to understand that it's not going to sound the same as it did when you were playing the trumpet. So it does take some getting used to.
So when we can get back to going to concerts again, and if folks are at a concert and there are trumpet players there, that's the reason why there may be several different horns lined up on little stands in front of the trumpet section.
Oh, absolutely. Right. It's so that we can, and sometimes we have to change our instruments, you know, in the same movement of a piece if that's what it's called for. So sometimes we have to even keep an instrument in our lap and make that change very quickly.
So a lot of gear shifting going on.
Exactly so.
And you mentioned the mutes too, all of the different mutes to express the different colors that the trumpet can make.
Yeah, we have I'd say mainly sort of three mutes that get used a lot. The straight mute, which is usually made of aluminum or brass or copper, and that's a very sort of a pointed sound. And the cup mute, which is a mellower sound, at times makes the trumpet sound a bit like a clarinet. And then there's the Harmon mute, which it's used in a lot of different, but has used been by a lot of different composers. The quintessential sound of the Harmon mute, if you know the great 20th century jazz trumpet player Miles Davis, the Harmon mute was very characteristic of his playing.
Yes, you always know when you hear Miles Davis.
Absolutely, it's a signature sound.
You mentioned the very well-known trumpet concerto in E-flat major by Joseph Haydn, and you also mentioned how different trumpets have different sounds. Let's compare and contrast those a bit.
Yeah, this is really great. I'm glad that we can make this little comparison. So I'd say most of the recordings that you might hear on the radio are played, as I mentioned, on an E-flat trumpet, but a normal trumpet in that it has valves. And so it's just sort of a shorter version of the B-flat or C trumpet. It's got piston valves like the rest of them. But the trumpet that it was written for, at the time that Haydn was writing, trumpets did not have valves. In fact, the valve was not going to be invented for about another 20 years after Haydn wrote this concerto. But Haydn had a trumpet player named Anton Weidinger, who I think he must have been, maybe he had a shop in the basement and was experimenting. But he was responsible for putting keys on a trumpet and inventing a keyed trumpet. Now, a key is different than a valve. If you are familiar with a saxophone or a clarinet,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about, but applied to a bugle or a natural trumpet. And so I have to say, I think it was not, in my mind, in my opinion, it's not the most successful instrument, but Haydn wrote a great piece of music for a trumpet. And so it's really interesting to hear it played, you know, in the last, I'd say 50 years or so, performing old music on the instruments that they would have the composers would have known has become a strong movement within classical music. So playing Baroque music on the old style woodwinds and on natural trumpets and violins with gut strings and differently configured bows. And so it's a very different sound. I like both modern and historically informed, quote unquote, authentic performances. But I think there's room for both. So this is a really great example. The listeners might have heard this tune before, but probably played on a modern instrument. And so the one that we've talked about is played on the keyed trumpet.
We'll hear the slow movement, the second movement of the concerto, played by Mark Bennett on a keyed trumpet, and he's accompanied by the English Concert, and they're directed by Trevor Pinnock. And then right after that, we will hear the last movement, the finale, played by a name that might be familiar to many folks, played on a modern trumpet by Wynton Marsalis. That was the final movement of the Concerto for Trumpet and Orchestra in E-flat major by Joseph Haydn. Wynton Marsalis was accompanied by the English Chamber Orchestra. They were conducted by Raymond Leppard. And before that, we heard the slow movement of the same concerto performed by Mark Bennett on a keyed trumpet. And he was accompanied by the English Consort, and they were led by Trevor Pinnock. My guest today is Dr. Neil Mueller. He is professor of trumpet at the CMU School of Music. And thanks again for joining me today for Listen to This.
Oh, this is such a pleasure. And it's so great for me to, you know, stop a moment and listen to these great recordings of great, great trumpet players. It's just so much fun.
Yes, and so much great music for the trumpet of all genres. We're focusing on classical today, but, you know, all of the great jazz and all of the great jazz players. We mentioned Miles Davis, of course, Louis Armstrong, and Harry James, and Clifford Brown, and I mean, the list goes on and on. And then, of course, all of the pop music that features trumpet. Back in the day, some of us may remember when the group Blood, Sweat, and Tears came onto the scene, or Chicago with all of that brass, and it was such a cool thing to hear all of those horns.
Oh boy, that was my junior high experience. I had older brothers, and they had all the Chicago albums and Blood, Sweat, and Tears, and then of course getting into Earth, Wind, and Fire, and
yes,
Stevie Wonder,
yes, Tower of Power.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, great, all great those stuff. Were the days.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of junior high, how did you come to play the trumpet?
Well, it's, you know, I came from a pretty musical family. My grew up in the church, singing a lot of hymns, and my earliest memories of music are with my dad with his finger on the hymn book, trying to sing harmony, sing the tenor part, and so that was always that was my early training, was trying to pick out the harmony parts, and but my older brothers all played instruments. And at first I thought about the oboe, but I had an older brother who played the oboe, and he was wonderful at it. And so that was, you know, inspiring. But then I had a couple older brothers who I would say were very good at it, but maybe not quite as interested, not in it as much as my oboist brother. But so there were like three trumpets always sort of laying around our house. And when I was, before I was really band age, I would just pick it up and try to get a sound, and it came pretty easy. And I think I remember at least one or two occasions where it went really well, and maybe I played a higher note than my brother did, and I thought, hey, this is a good deal. I was the youngest of five boys, and so competition was a thing.
Ah, the old sibling rivalry. We'll do it every time.
Oh, man. And you know, I was never going to be able to throw a ball further, or run faster, or jump higher, but I could, you know, the trumpets, maybe that's my thing. So that's what I poured my energy into.
Are any of your older brothers still playing their instruments?
The one who was an oboist is also a wonderful pianist, and he plays for himself, but he had another career.
So all of those trumpets laying around were good for something for you anyway.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So then you went on through the school band program and just worked your way up.
Yeah, and playing everything. I mean, I loved to play jazz. I grew up in a small town in South Dakota, and there was no orchestra program. And so I remember going to the International Music Camp up on the North Dakota and Canadian, up on the Canadian border. And it was the first time I ever played in an orchestra. And that was just really something. I remember we played the last couple movements of Beethoven 5, and we played the Firebird. And it was, from then, boy, I was hooked.
Oh, yeah. It just takes a couple of experiences like that. And like you say, then you were hooked. And here you are, professor of trumpet at the CMU School of Music, and a really fine one, too. I know that your students are very, very happy that you're there.
Well, we have a good time and great students. Great students.
Yes, yes. What are some of the joys and challenges of playing the trumpet?
Well, the joys are it physically feels great to play the trumpet, and it sounds good to me, and I just love it. And if I have a day where there's nothing else for me to do, which is sort of rare, I love to practice. I love to sit and play the trumpet. And I think one of the things that people may not understand is that, like all brass instruments, our bodies are actually the ones that create the vibrations. So we're actually much more like singers than a lot of other instruments. A reed vibrates, but that's sort of external. That's part of the instrument. A string vibrates. That's part of the instrument. But with brass players, it's our lips. And the resonance inside our body is as important as the resonance of the trumpet itself. And so the trumpet itself doesn't make any sound. I sometimes think, imagine sitting down at a piano and you can play play a big old major chord. But sort of the piano can give you confidence. And the trumpet, you have to give confidence to the trumpet. It won't do anything. And it's not going to give you confidence. So you have to bring it to the instrument.
Yes, and we mentioned earlier with some of those, especially those very exposed passages, I would think that it is a bit stressful because you can't have a bad day. If you do, everyone will know.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that's sort of, I think maybe you don't see it unless you're really up close to a trumpet player, but, you know, I've had people notice, come up to me after a concert, and they'll say, "Well, I saw you playing this one note, and you had these valves down, and then you played another note, but the same valves were down." And unlike a flute or a clarinet or something, or a violin, where there might be a certain position, if you move the bow or you move the air, that note's going to come out. And it doesn't work that way on brass instruments.
There's, no.
One thing, as you know, Judy, one fingering, many notes.
Yes, that's for sure. And a lot of room for error, as they say. So you really have to be on your A game all of the time.
Well, not as much as horn. I really admire my colleagues who play the horn, and it's just the horn played well is just such a miracle. I do admire horn players who can be so accurate, but it's a similar situation on trumpet.
You know, this is a good time, I think, to listen to a little bit more music as far as comparing and contrasting again. And you brought up something really interesting that you pointed out to me before this. And can you explain a little bit about your comparison of West End Blues and this concerto by Tomasi?
Oh, yeah. These are two wonderful pieces. And I first want to start off by saying that Louis Armstrong is one of the greatest musicians of the 20th century. I mean, and the fact that he played the trumpet is a point of pride for all trumpet players. You know, instantly recognizable as a singer, and his playing so reflects his voice. But he was such an innovator and such a great musician. This West End Blues, which is again sort of a typical blues form, there's nothing so groundbreaking about the composition, but his introduction to it, his opening cadenza, is really just such an amazing feat of virtuosity. And that's one of the things that happened in the 20th century is jazz players really took the technique of playing the trumpet and expanded it. The Tomasi is written, Henri Tomasi was a 20th century French composer who wrote both concert music and spent a lot of time writing music for radio and television. he wrote this wonderful concerto for the trumpet. And it just struck me, listening to Louis Armstrong play the opening to West End Blues with this opening cadenza, and then thinking about the Tomasi, the way that it begins. It's not so jazzy necessarily, but they're both sort of fanfares. They're both announcements. They're sort of, you know, this opening salvo that says, see here, this is the trumpet, and this is what the trumpet can do. And they're just so, and the Tomasi is a wonderful, challenging piece for trumpeters to play. In fact, I've got a student who's playing his senior recital next weekend and doing a great job of playing the Tomasi. But these are you know, you'll hear a very different approach to the trumpet in terms of its sound, because the Tomasi was written for, you know, more of an orchestral or solo trumpeter. And Louis Armstrong was Louis Armstrong. And so there's a very, very different, just basic approach to the trumpet. But I think the music and the character of the trumpet and fanfare and the brashness and virtuosity, frankly, is present in both pieces.
Well, let's listen to hear if we can hear a bit of Louis Armstrong in the opening of the Concerto for Trumpet and Orchestra by Henry Tomasi. That's performed by Wynton Marsalis, but first we'll start with the West End Blues. We heard the West End Blues featuring Louis Armstrong and part of the Concerto for Trumpet and Orchestra by Henry Tomasi featuring Wynton Marsalis. My guest today on Afternoon Classical for Listen to This is Dr. Neil Mueller. He is professor of trumpet at the CMU School of Music. Thanks so much again for joining me today. This has been fun.
Ah, it's great. So great to hear those two great trumpet players, cheek by jowl.
So I do like to ask my guest, if you were to meet a young person or anyone who might be interested in playing or maybe switching instruments, what would be your elevator pitch for the trumpet?
Well, it is the instrument of kings.
That's all you've got to say, really.
Yeah, right. I just think, you know, those two little bits that you played, I think, would be a great selling point, you know, because we're so important in jazz, so important in classical music, that there's no boredom playing the trumpet.
That is a great elevator pitch.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there's abject fear, but there's no boredom.
Dr. Neil Mueller, professor of trumpet at the CMU School of Music. Thanks for all you do there. You are an important part of CMU, that's for sure. So thanks for joining me today on Afternoon Classical.
This is really fun, Judy.